Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network, and we have so much to talk about this week. Thankfully, I'm joined by my usual partner, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, we're going to get into some of these games. We're going to take questions in the mailbag. We'll discuss some of the bigger issues around the NFL, and we'll make our picks for week six. It's going to be a busy podcast, but what a great slate of games, and especially the early ones.
The early ones were fantastic. And then, you know, you watch yesterday, and it was just a situation where no lead, no matter how big the lead was, seemed like it was safe. And, I mean, you saw games that were, you know, if you were just flipping through the channels, you'd say, well, that's over with. And then, lo and behold, here they come roaring back. And, you know, St. Louis throws a scare into Philadelphia. And that game was, you know, it was a yawner early on, and then all of a sudden St. Louis comes back, and then Philadelphia blitzes them late to kind of hold them off. But it was really an incredible weekend of football again.
Don't start talking about yawning already, Jeff, because I'm working on 4 hours of sleep. It's 5 a.m. where you are. Hey, listen, they always talk about Ndamukong Suh, right, being public enemy number one in the NFL, that 350-pound hard-charging defensive tackle. It's not. I'm telling you right now, Nick Pike of NFL UK is public enemy number one for booking this podcast at 10 a.m. on a Monday morning. The unassuming figure who's about 100 pounds dripping wet. Scariest man in the NFL. Jeff, I'm sitting here. They brought me in a coffee. I'm a bit of a coffee snob. I like my coffee. I like a nice cup of coffee. And this one they brought me is not a nice cup of coffee, but I nearly cried when it came in. It's just lovely, that caffeine boost. Hey,
well, I tell you what, brother, at least you get to be awake at an hour where there is coffee. I can't find a coffee shop at 4:30 when I'm driving in here.
Do you know, I said to the guys through the other side of the glass as well, I said, I'm going to make a point of what time we're starting this podcast. And they were like, Jeff's starting at 5 a.m. You've got no chance. He's not going to have any sympathy. Jeff, let's look at some of these games. And you talk about the comeback. So Carolina were down 21-7 to the Bears. They come back and win. Well, Detroit were up 14-0 against Buffalo. The Bills come back and win. Saints were down by 11 in the fourth quarter. They come back and win. The Giants score the last 20 points in their game against the Falcons. The Rams make a game of it against the Eagles. But the one I want to start with, because we talked a little bit about Mike Pettine and the job he's doing with the Cleveland Browns, they produced the biggest road comeback in NFL history. They trailed 28-3 in the first half, and they win it 29-28. This is a team, they're now 2-2. You've just got to admire how competitive the Browns have been this year.
Yeah, they are. And you know, you look at it, and Gordon's out, and they've had all kinds of challenges. Mm. And you know, but he's found a way. And this is interesting as you watch Pettin go from being the coordinator with the Jets to the coordinator with the Bills, and now as a head coach with Cleveland. There's been one common thread in guys that he's coached, whether that's the defenses or now the full football team, is that they compete. And, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, he's got the emotions of his football team. He's got the hearts of his football team. And they just believe that they can keep coming and keep battling. And, you know, when you get that, that's a special thing. And for them now, you look at what they've done over the course of the first four games, and you got to really think that, you know, certainly I don't start popping champagne corks yet, but in Cleveland, you know, you got to feel like, hey, we got a chance now. We have a chance, and that's been a long time since they've had that feeling around Cleveland.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff's going to talk us through the coaching aspect of comebacks in a little while, so we'll dig into that a bit. We're not going to go through every game. We never do here on the Inside the Huddle podcast, but we are going to, you know, look at the big ones, and let's stick with the comebacks then, because the Bears, Jeff, lots of yards again, but four turnovers for the Chicago Bears. Four turnovers. Robbie Gould misses a makeable field goal. So maybe I'm flipping this around and doing the Carolina Panthers an injustice, because they won the game and that game was there to be won, and they're now 3-2. But I look at the Bears and think, you missed a trick there, and you missed an opportunity.
Yeah, they did, and you know, I listened to Mark Trestman's comments after the game, and you know, as he always does, he put it on himself. He said, "It starts with me." But, you know, he doesn't throw the ball for Jay.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, this is that thing with Cutler. You know, he's so enticing because he gives you such great play some days and then sometimes just makes bad throws and made some bad decisions. Carolina, you know, took advantage of him. I thought Carolina going to the no huddle was a big key in that thing.
Mm.
But, you know, when you look at it, all three phases of Chicago broke down. Gold missed the short field goal,
yeah.
which got the momentum back for Carolina, got them started. Obviously, we talked about Chicago's turnovers. And, you know, defensively, you've got to make a stop. That's what you're paid to do on defense.
Mm.
When there's a turnover, you have to go out there and you have to be able to stop people. And, you know, they weren't able to do that. And so all three phases broke down for the Bears. And what will be another one of those losses that when I think at the end of the season when they, you know, weigh it all in,
yep.
that, you know, that opening week loss and this one are going to really, really hurt the Bears' playoff chances.
A couple of things jumped out at me for the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm sure you're very happy to see them 4-1. Your friend Jason Garrett, the head coach, who's been under some pressure the last couple of years, gets that team on top of the NFC East. Dez Bryant continues to play at such a high level. The catch he made in overtime to set up the winning field goal was just incredible. We actually had a question from Tom Marshall, who said, how close is Dez Bryant to being labelled the best receiver in the NFL? I wrote about this in the preseason and felt that Dez was ready to make that. He was already extremely productive, but I thought he was ready to take that step up and become, you know, maybe the next guy after Calvin Johnson, but Johnson's banged up, so maybe it is Dez. But Dez was incredible, and Tony Romo showed some real athleticism to get away from J.J. Watt for the touchdown to Terrence Williams.
Yeah, you know what? You got the good Tony. You know,
you
got the one that can spin away from somebody. And you know, that's getting away from J.J. Watt's not the easiest thing to do.
Mm.
And he found a way to keep the play alive, which is, you know, that's been one of the things that's been his forte through his whole career, was the ability to keep plays alive. And, you know, you talk about Dez, and Dez, you know, is showing signs of starting to mature, number one.
Mm.
But the thing he's always had is that incredible catching radius, because he's got such long arms and he's so long and competes so hard for the football. So, you know, I think he is in that category, certainly, of the top four or five receivers. You know, you start talking about the A.J. Greens, the Megatrons, you know. There's a lot of them that in that top echelon of receivers, he's certainly amongst those guys.
Jeff, I want to talk a couple of bits with the Buffalo Bills 17-14 win over the Detroit Lions. And start with Calvin Johnson, who's been slowed by an ankle injury. So last week he had two catches for 12 yards, and last night he had one catch for 7 yards. And the Lions are having to try and do it with defense. Tell us from a coach's point of view, because this is a genuine superstar, a megastar. When is it time to say you need a couple of weeks off? Or do you make sure they're out there every week? Because I think back to the Falcons last year, and Roddy White was hobbling around on a bad ankle for about 6 games when he probably should have been sat down.
Well, you know what? There's a saying that we use. It. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a 16. In the NFL, it's a 16-week season. In the CFL, it's an 18-week season. So pro football is a long, tough grind. And when you've got a guy, especially one of your preeminent players, has an injury that's doesn't allow him to play at full speed, you got to make the decision. Do you pull him and try and get him healthy so that he can play full speed, or do you let him limp through? Now, I like to err personally on the side of get him healthy, because you're going to need him down the stretch to be playing at a high level.
Mm.
These kinds of injuries, ankles, hamstrings, those kinds of things, they can be nagging and just hang with an athlete unless he's given an opportunity to step away and get his body right so that he can compete, you know, 100%. You watch Megatron play, and obviously he's competitive and he wants to be out there and he's battling as hard as he can for his teammates, but he's just not playing at the highest level. And, you know, you're the biggest weapon on the football team, and I know they want to have you out there, but in the long haul, I really believe, because this is going to be, they have to be healthy and you have to be hot when you get into December.
Yeah.
And that's when you make your push. And I certainly would sit him down and give him an opportunity to heal up and get ready to go. If, you know, again, you don't have all the medical history in front of you, but that's, I would always err in that direction.
I'm going to be purely selfish and say I hope they sit him down now for a couple of weeks so he can tear it up at Wembley. And if it gets close to Wembley, I hope they don't sit him down and they play him. Well, we want to see stars like that on the field, though, don't we, Jeff?
I'll tell you what.
That's why we watch
you're going to see a special, special athlete. And I hope he's around town and around the fans so that you can see just how big he is.
Yep.
You know, because you think of a wide receiver and you think of these skinny guys that, you know, 200-pound guys, 6'2", 200-pound. He is a big, big man. He looks like a tight end more, or outside linebacker more than a receiver.
We did air his interview that I did with him in the summer. He said his coaches tried in high school and then in college tried to make him a tight end. Not surprising when you look at the size. One other aspect of this game I want to talk about, Jim Schwartz. You knew I was going to go here, Jeff. The defensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills. So he was the Lions coach up until last season. Then he got fired by Detroit. So he goes back to Detroit. His defense does play very well indeed. Marcel Darius had 3 sacks. But Jim Schwartz gets chaired off the field like he's just won the Super Bowl. He's on the shoulders of his players. And it emerges, according to a story from the Detroit Free Press today, with some quotes from Randall Johnson of the Bills, who said that Jim Schwartz had asked to be carried off the field. It was discussed in the OTAs in the summer, and all that the Bills players did was make his dream come true. This didn't sit well with me, Jeff, but what did you think?
All right, now, first of all, I got I am sure that Jim made a comment, maybe flippantly, in OTAs.
Right.
Where, you know, you start talking about, okay, we've got this opponent this week, we got this opponent.
Yeah.
He says, all right, week 4, we're going to Detroit, and you know how it went for me in Detroit. We're going to play so well, you're going to carry me off the field after the game. And I'm sure he said it and just let it go.
Yeah.
But the players remember that stuff, and they talk. And, you know, he's always been real popular with his defensive guys. And, you know, I think it was kind of cool. It was interesting watching the game at, they, you know, the camera panned to him a number of times during the game after they would make a sack or whatever. And he was really, you know, he was enjoying the way his defense was playing. And, you know, so I'm happy for him. I didn't take it as a bad thing at all.
All right. You've made a good case, my friend. I'm just about going to let him off. Yeah. You know what was said in those locker rooms more than I do. So,
I just know the way that
yes.
things are said, right? And, you know, I'm sure, I mean, because let me tell you something. If the players, if you're a coach and you come in and you go, well, this is what's going to happen, guys. I need you to carry me off the field because I want to look good. They're going to look at you and go, yeah, dude, no way.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I'm sure that's what happened.
Oh, I'd like to think they did that every now and then. What about the New Orleans Saints and Jeff? 37-31 winners.
Wait, let's go back to Buffalo real quick.
Oh, go on.
I think there's a story in this thing.
Go on.
You see what a veteran quarterback can do. Now, Orton wasn't lights out.
Right.
But Orton gave players chances to make plays, right? The ball to Watkins late in the game that Watkins tips to himself. Those are balls where he puts it around their playmakers and gives them chances to make plays. The decision-making better. The, you know, care of the ball better. All things that I think are real positives for Buffalo and going forward, because that AFC East, you know, that's going to be a dogfight to the end. The Bills are a talented football team, quarterback play has been their challenge, and I think Orton's going to give them a chance to be in the playoff talk late. You know, late in the year, if not in the playoffs.
Well, maybe the mental strength was an issue, Jeff, as well, because he didn't start great, as you said. He threw the pick 6 to Rasheem Mathis, and it was 14-0 down on the road, but he kept plugging away. He didn't, and maybe EJ is not mature enough to do that yet. We've seen all these stories about EJ with a mental conditioning coach and trying to be a leader, and it's not that stuff, that side of his game has not developed. Kyle Orton was starting for his 5th NFL team last night. So he's been around the block enough times to know that you can overcome a deficit. And they plugged away and they did
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you know what? That's so true because, you know, he's not going to get fazed. He realizes it's a 60-minute game, and, you know, you go on to the next play, the next possession, and he's not going to carry that interception with him. That's what veterans, you know, bring to the table for you. Really interesting that a story broke here this week about Jimbo Fisher, the head coach at Florida State, was reportedly had told NFL coaches and general managers that he didn't think E.J. Manuel was a starter in the National Football League. And he said, as a matter of fact, that had E.J. came back for his senior year, he would have been beaten out by a young quarterback that he was grooming. And we're talking about Jameis Winston, yeah. Obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that really, I tell you what, that boy, they're chewing that up and spitting it out in the Buffalo media right now because you know, it's interesting if the guy's head coach didn't think he was, you know, an NFL starter, you know, and again, obviously it's young, early in his career, second year, but all signs indicate that he's, you know, he just doesn't have the accuracy, the decision-making, the maturity right now as a quarterback to be a guy that can lead a football team into the playoffs. So Orton's $6 million contract is a bargain right now.
What did Doug Whaley and Doug Marrone do here with E.J. Manuel? Because they traded up to get him. There's new ownership coming in, which could mean a change. So by bailing on E.J. Manuel, part of me thinks, well, okay, by bailing on him, they're admitting they've made a mistake. But then also you could say, well, they're not compounding that mistake by making him play week after week. I mean, we're seeing here with the Buffalo Bills what happens when there's a change in upper management and you know that there's other changes potentially coming. It trickles all the way down the organization right onto the field on Sundays.
I'm going to tell you what, it trickles farther than that. It trickles into the equipment room. It trickles into the training room because all of those people are hired by the head coach. And typically when a head coach comes in, he wants his guys. So, you know, winning is so critical. I think they had to make a decision. Mm. And my understanding is that Doug did this actually in the locker room after the game, after the previous game, and then solidified his decision on the plane ride home, talked to some veteran players about making the move. You know, you have to make it. Here's their reality in Buffalo right now, and it's a tough reality, is that they've got new ownership. New ownership obviously wants their guys. Now, how do you become their guy? Well, you win. You get them in the playoffs, and you show that you can win. And they're going to look at all the decisions that were made by personnel. You know, when you draft a guy and you trade up to get a guy, and then he doesn't work out for you, now you're in a real tough situation. So if you stay with that guy trying to prove a point and you lose, you're gone. Mm. If you make the decision to go another way and you win, now you at least have a chance to say, hey, we did what was best for the football team. We evaluated the situation as it was. We admitted, you know, that our mistake, we moved on, and now we're in the playoffs. And you hope that that's enough to keep you around. But that's one of the things that Doug's struggling with right now, as he fights to get the Bills into the playoffs and hopefully doing a good enough job that the Pegulas, the new owners, will, you know, want to keep him around.
Mm, added pressure in an already high-pressure situation. Let's move on to the New Orleans Saints. 37-31 winners in overtime against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Good win. They needed it. But does this just paper over some cracks, Jeff? Because
Yeah. You know what? I do. I think there's some issues here. Mm. If you saw Sean Payton's reaction when Breeze threw the pick, and to see him bark at Breeze, you know, openly like that, that's the first time I've ever seen anything like that in their relationship on the field. Now that happens, right? And it certainly happens when you're not playing well. But you know, I think that you look at this football team, and you know they're giving up too many points against offenses that they shouldn't. And you know they made some plays and they got momentum going, and I think the sack for the safety was a huge play, a momentum builder for them. But you know, I just think the Saints are not playing at a level that certainly I and a lot of people anticipated they would be playing right now. Now you lose Jarius Byrd for the year, and I think there's some questions in New Orleans. But they're playing in a division that is really topsy turvy, and you know if they can get the ship righted how hurt is Graham? There's a lot of questions right now in New Orleans.
As a coach, you look at Drew Brees. Do you see, because obviously these things tend to go hand in hand at times, do you see a quarterback who's trying to do too much knowing that he's going to be in a shootout because of the defense? What would your message be to Drew Brees as he runs out of the tunnel every Sunday?
Well, I think the biggest thing with him is just to stay within yourself and stay within the offense. And we've shown that we can score points and that we can move the ball and that we'll be, you know, we'll be in every game as long as we just play our game. But like you say, when you get outside of yourself and you get outside of the game plan and you get outside of your reads and, you know, that's when you start to force balls and you see what, you know, the kind of things that happen where you get a pick six in that situation that really, you know, really was, you know, a bad, bad play.
A couple of other games we'll just touch on and then I want to get into the, you know, these comebacks and the mental side of that in the NFL. But Peyton Manning was incredible again last night. I mean, it was a historic night for Peyton Manning. So he threw his 500th touchdown pass of his career. It was 7 yards to Julius Thomas. He reached that mark in 244 games. The only man with more touchdown passes, Brett Favre, with 508. Manning threw for a career-high 479 yards. And that was his 13th 400-yard passing game, which tied the NFL record set by Dan Marino. I mean, this guy, I guess it's similar to last year, though, Jeff. That's a very good Arizona team. I actually think Arizona, who were down to their third-string quarterback last night in Logan Thomas, put up a decent fight. So it's a good team that they played against. But Denver, it's fantasy football numbers again, but they'll be measured by what happens in January and February.
Yeah, you know, when the weather gets cold and you got to throw outside and you got, that's when it, you know, when it matters. I think this is, and again, it sounds like I'm, you know, trying to give props to one of my guys, but I just really truly believe this. I think Emmanuel Sanders has been a big,
big plus
for them. He has given them a real plus, you know, along with Julius Thomas, along with all the other weapons that they have there. He doesn't have to rely on Welker as much as he did. He's another guy that defenses now have to game plan for. And they create a tremendous amount of problems for you because where do you put your doubles? Where do you put the safety? Who do you, you know, how are you going to match up with Julius Thomas? Who's going to take, you know, Welker in the slot? Who's going to take Emmanuel? Emmanuel can play in the slot and outside.
Well, on that, Jeff, let me just interrupt. I was going to ask you then because there was some Broncos fans, they weren't quite reaching for the panic button because they knew that they were still had offensive weapons, but Eric Decker was a big loss. Is Emmanuel Sanders better for this offense than Eric Decker?
Well, I think the whole season, let's let the season play out before we make that decision. The thing that Decker could do is Decker made big plays and got in the end zone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Emmanuel, you know, over 100 yards receiving last night. And, you know, and that's positive. But I think you got to weigh it. You know, you don't make that call until, you know, the season's over with. I think Emmanuel can do more things than Decker could.
Yep.
He can line up in more places. He's in and out of his breaks a little quicker. He's not the big physical target that Decker was, but I think he does give you some things, you know, with the ball after the catch that Decker didn't.
What do you mean wait till the end of the season? I'm in the media. We knee-jerk react every Monday morning, Jeff. And I need my answers. But, yeah, he is. I mean, that's the thing, I think, the versatility, because when Welker was out, he was inside, and now he's outside, and that to me, you couldn't do that with Eric Decker is probably the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, exactly. And again, you know, I think, to be real honest with you, I think Emmanuel's better in the slot, but he has the ability to go outside and play outside. And again, when you've got that kind of flexibility, now you can do things with formations that you can't with other guys. Thomas can play outside. Thomas can play in the slot. Thomas can be an attached tight end. So they have tremendous flexibility. And then the other thing that Emmanuel brings to you is he is really, really smart. You notice the guys that Manning kind of is attracted to, or who where the ball goes. He goes to guys that he can trust and will be where they're supposed to be and can make the read and do all that stuff. And Emmanuel has been well trained. He did that as a college player and was one of the, you know, had some of the greatest numbers in college football when he was a college player, and it's transferred into the NFL. And he's in an offense now that suits him better, frankly, than what he was in Pittsburgh.
Jeff, if there's one thing that's going to cheer me up on a Monday morning when I'm pretty tired, it's discussing a 31-point loss for the New York Jets. And the sorry, Jets fans.
You are so much. You can't hardly. Do you have fish scales on underneath that shirt of yours, I swear to God. You can't. You Miami guys are unbelievable.
We had a lot of questions. And all right, I'm joking aside, but we are. I talked about this on Sky Sports last night, and Jets fans are a passionate bunch. I mean, I asked about some questions for the mailbag. We've got lots of questions from Jets fans. So this fan base deserves better. If you look at what they've done, and I think we need to point the finger at the way the roster has been built, not just on Geno Smith. So, you know, I said this last night. They had Mark Sanchez, who was error-prone, turnover-prone, and made poor decisions. They replaced him with Geno Smith, who is exactly the same way. And who's riding to the rescue off the bench? It's Michael Vick, who's had decision-making issues and turnovers. They've lined up one after the other error-strewn quarterbacks, surrounded them with virtually nothing, and I think they're beginning to reap what they sow, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's a recipe for 31 zip. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And whether it's Tannenbaum or who it's going to be, there's going to be, you know, this. Somebody's going to have to pay, and I'm afraid it's going to be Rex and you know, that entire staff. And they're good guys there. Marty Morningwig, the offensive coordinator, played for me in college and is a, you know, friend of mine. And, you know, he just don't have weapons. And, you know, like we talk about, you know, if Eric Decker is your number one, you're struggling outside. And, you know, it's the same thing on defense. They don't have corners. What do you need in that, you know, what do you need in what Rex does defensively? First thing you better have is you better have some corners that can play man-to-man. And if you can't play man-to-man and you're going to play that defense, you're going to give up plays. And so I think the Jets, frankly, are in a situation where they don't have the roster to be competitive. And, you know, and that's on both sides of the football.
Just on that then, Jeff, because, you know, you mentioned Tannenbaum. Tannenbaum did pay with his job, you know, and lost his job. John Idzik comes in as the general manager, wins the power struggle with Rex Ryan, really, and says, that, you know, I'm building this roster. We had a question from Toby who said, is John Idzik to blame because he left $20 million of salary cap on the table? And this maybe goes back to that thing you talked about before about, you know, card collecting, and because not everyone's going to want to line up and play for the New York Jets. You can't just say, well, you spend every single dollar you have, can you?
No, you don't. You got to be fiscally responsible, but you also have to get the players.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll tell you what, if you're a head coach and you know that you're going into a pivotal year in your career as a head coach, and you know you don't get the opportunity every day. I mean, these jobs are hard to get, and once you get one, you know, you fight like crazy to hold on to it because there's only 32 of them in the world. And you know, if you're Rex and you're saying, now wait a second, we've got money on the table, you know, we're deficient from a roster standpoint, we need players in here. You know, we need players because, you know, the reality of it is, if you don't have players in pro football, you're not going to win football games. You're not going to out-coach guys. That is not going to happen. You're not going to help motivate guys. You're going to, I mean, you can get edges, small wins, slight edges, but you're not going to win football games by out-coaching somebody. You got to have players, and the Jets just don't have the players. And like you say, Tannenbaum, it cost him his job. Now, who's the next guy that's going to go? Well, typically what happens is in these scenarios is they're going to start pointing fingers pretty quick. And, well, you didn't get me this or you didn't get me that or, you know, I mean, and they're all going to be talking to Woody you know, it's not going to be pretty at the end. I'm just telling you, if this thing continues this way.
No, we had lots of questions. Paul Holland asked about whether Rex Ryan was to blame. We've kind of covered that. Tom Marshall asks, how long can Rex hold on? And this is a good question, Jeff. We have smart listeners, I'm telling you.
We really do. I tell you, and knowledgeable, not just smart, knowledgeable.
Listen to this one from Colin Mehigan, who says, Rex Ryan will be the next Raiders head coach discussed. Because think about it, the Raiders want a headline maker, don't they? They want a star to lead their team. That might not be a bad call there. That might actually turn out to be pretty true.
Well, you know what? They need, as you say, they need some pizzazz. They need a punch, right? I think that Rex is certainly that. And he's proven that he's gotten that team to the playoffs. They've been, you know, I think a game away from the Super Bowl a couple times. So, you know, he can win, but he has to have the players to win with. Now, for Rex, if in fact he's not able to, you know, finish out his contract with the Jets and, you know, has to go someplace else, right now, I don't know if the Raiders is where I'd want him to go because I'm not sure he has the players there either.
Right.
I mean, you want to go someplace.
Good situation, right?
Where you've got a chance to have success, and you know, I think that's why when Trestman got the Bears job, I was happy for him because, in my estimation, you know, they were a team that was going to be closer in the playoffs because you had a quarterback, you had weapons offensively, and at that point they had a real strong defense. Now, you know, that doesn't guarantee anything because they've struggled. You know, they've been an 8-8 team, and you know, but at least you got a chance when you got players.
Just on that Jets-Chargers game, I thought Darren Sproles would re-sign for the Chargers last night. That Brandon Oliver kid, that was like a morphed into Darren Sproles, didn't he? Incredible stuff.
You know, it's amazing as you look around the league and the number of guys that are, you know, where did they come from kind of guys, particularly at those running back and skill position guys. You realize just how many good players there are, you know, coming out of college now at those positions. And that type of guy is, you know, really, you watch Giovanni Bernard last night. You see those guys that have that speed, that change pace, that, you know, they're not big guys, but they can, you know, they seem to function well in the offenses in today's NFL.
All right, Jeff, let's talk about comebacks because it was a big weekend in the NFL for comebacks and how you cope with that if you're a coach of a team that's behind by a lot. Say you're the Cleveland Browns. So you're down 28-3 on the road. Now, I know it's a cliche, but you hear them say, oh, one play at a time. We're going to get back into it one play at a time. But there must be a part of Brian Hoyer that was saying, I can't believe we're down by 25 on the road. And so how do you deal with that from an X's and O's point of view as a coach, but also how are you mentally trying to reinforce your message to your players when they're down by a lot of points?
Well, you know, it's like that old saying about how do you eat an elephant, you know, one bite at a time. And, you know, that's really the way it is.
Yeah.
You have to shield yourself mentally from, you can't look at 25. You got to look at this possession. Let's get points. I don't care how we get them, whether they're threes or sevens. Let's get points this possession. Then we'll go to the next possession. And once you get into that zone of, hey, it's not about 25. It's about, let's get three here. Let's get seven here. You know, that's when you can start to function as in a comeback mode. Now, there's a lot of factors that go into that, right? About, you know, do you go to no huddle? Do you speed up the tempo of the game?
Yep.
How do you maximize your you know, how do you maximize your possessions defensively, special teams? It all factors in together, and you start to play what we call situational football. And you practice these scenarios in practice. So, for example, at the end of our practice, we always have a no-huddle period, and I'll give the defense a scenario. Say, up by 5, minute 28 left to play, so that you put guys in those scenarios. Same thing offensively. They do the same thing. We're down by 12 with 2:30 left to play, and you manage those situations, and you try and create those scenarios in practice so that when you go to a game, you know, you've at least been through it emotionally. But the biggest thing, Neil, is to get the focus off of the 25 and onto this possession.
So it's a very clinical approach then. You're trying to take the emotion out of it.
Yeah, well, I think the emotion will take care of itself once you get to the point of recognizing that, you know, you can't get it all back this possession, but what you can get back is three or seven. Or even if it's just field position to create an opportunity to have a short field after the defense stops them and they punt. So, you know, it's a mindset and it's a focus issue in those situations. And then what happens is the momentum starts to change and you start to believe. And then once you get that belief, you can see it. You can actually feel it. Momentum is, you know, we always talk about momentum. Big Mo just walked over from that sideline to that sideline.
Then you want the emotion, right?
Yeah. And then it becomes tougher on the opponent. And all of a sudden they start to squeeze a little bit. They start to get a little tight and play soft. And you know, they don't play to make plays. They play not to lose as opposed to play to win. And, you know, that's another scenario. So all of those things factor in. That's why the sideline is such an incredibly intense place to be on game day, because of all of that stuff that's swirling around, all the emotion of the game, all the, you know, the injuries, the situations, the, you know, battles with the officials. All of it is really, there's no place like it.
So you coaches, you would know how many roughly how many possessions you're going to have in a half in a game, and so is that where you try and speed it up? And maybe we saw Cleveland last night get aggressive and they blocked a punt. So you're trying to steal possessions here and there. I mean, is that what you're trying to do, is get extra?
Absolutely, because you're trying to create opportunities for your football team. And so as you start to coach, then you start to figure, okay, in a typical game, let's say you'll have 12 possessions. Right? Now, you're looking at the clock and you're saying that there's 6 minutes left to go. We're probably going to get three more possessions. We're down by 28. All right, well, that's not enough possessions to win the football game. So you're going to have to get possessions. What does that mean? Defensively, now you start to focus on turnovers to the point where you're ripping and stripping the ball rather than worrying about tackles. In the special teams, if you force an opponent to punt, now you say, okay, now we will be more aggressive and maybe go after a punt, try and block a punt, get a short field or a touchdown out of the special teams. And then offensively, obviously you're going to go to your hurry up or your no huddle scenario. The same thing's true, Neil, as you're coaching a game, as you work with the weather, because when you have the wind, for example, you want to go fast as you can in all the phases of the game. For example, your punt team goes out, you want to snap it and punt it right now, right? Conversely, when you are into the wind, you want to use as much clock as you can in transition football so that you're maximizing the amount of time that you have the environmental factor, you have the wind. So there's a lot that goes on in managing a game, and that's why the really good game managers as head coaches, they understand how the clock works. They understand how timeouts work. They know how to use the challenges. All of those things go into being a great head coach on game day. Being a head coach has a lot of factors to it, but being able to manage a game on game day is really critical.
Well, it is fascinating because all of that stuff you talk about from a tactical point of view, and then you're dealing with 53 different characters. Everyone's going to deal with that adversity the same way.
Absolutely, and 53 different. It's not just 53 different characters. You're dealing with assistant coaches, so some of these NFL staffs have as many as 18 or 19 coaches there. They all have headsets. They're all game. I mean, everybody's into the game. How you can manage all of those personalities, all of those egos, all of those emotions, all of those levels of maturity, and still stay level-headed and clear-headed and able to make decisions. Good decisions is really, that's what separates in a lot of ways, in my mind, the great ones from the not so great ones.
All right, we're going to make some good decisions now. We're going to make our picks for week 6 in the NFL. If you're a Bengals or Patriots fan, we are going to touch on the big Sunday night game in our mailbag. So don't worry, we will get to that game. Jeff, we did all right last week on the picks. I went 10-4. You were 11-3, and we've both got Seattle to come.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny, though, but I looked at, because we're working right now, right? So I catch the games as I can catch them, and we have the network playing in the office. And a couple of times I looked up at the scoreboards, and I went, man, oh, man, here I go again. I'm going to have a bad week. Then they flipped because, there were some games where, I thought Kansas City was ahead of San Francisco. Yeah. San Francisco has to come back and win that one, Just a lot of the games were, crazy. Like the Bucks were way ahead of the Saints, and I'm going, man, oh man, oh man.
It wasn't.
And then you come back in the room and look up, and it's the Saints are in the lead. So it was one of those weekends of football.
All right. The good news is I actually know which games are on Sky Sports this week because I didn't last week. So
who do you guys have?
We got we got Detroit and Minnesota as the early game on Sunday, and then we got Dallas at Seattle. So should be a fascinating test for the Cowboys. But we start on Thursday night, Indianapolis at Houston. The Colts have won 3 in a row. I think although it's on the road, I'm going to pick Indianapolis. What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, I think Indianapolis, as you watch the Houston play the Cowboys, I think you saw their Achilles heel a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're good enough offensively. Fitzpatrick, it's that same old question. Is he good enough or is he just a game manager? But, obviously Luck is playing high level, really playing well, and I think that Indianapolis will win that one.
Let's move on to Sunday then. The Chicago Bears at the Atlanta Falcons. The agoraphobic Matt Ryan, who's now lost 9 games in a row outdoors, will be glad to be back in the dome. I don't know, the Bears, What do you reckon here, Jeff? Because the Bears can put up the yards and Atlanta haven't got much of a defense. They just need to finish drives, don't they, the Bears?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. This is a pivotal game for the Bears. I mean, a pivotal game. And as you say, the Falcons are struggling on defense, but you know, so are the Bears. The Bears aren't world beaters yet on defense, and they've got some injury issues now on defense. And, you know, I don't know. This is a tough one. Just when I thought Atlanta had turned the corner and was going to be a good football team, then they played, you know, they haven't played well in a couple weeks. And I think this game means so much to the Bears that you know, I'm not going to say it's their season, but they've got to get this win. They need this win on the road. They need to get some positive momentum, or they're not going to be in the playoffs. So I'm going to take the Bears.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bears as well. The Falcons sent another two offensive linemen to injured reserve the week before week five, so not good for them. The New England Patriots at the Buffalo Bills. Patriots bounced back in a big way on Sunday night, but it's a tough Buffalo defense. Who you got in this one, Jeff?
You know, I think the Patriots will win, but I think this is going to be a heck of a football game. And, you know, Orton obviously gives them a better chance offensively. The Bills have a talented, you know, a talented roster. While I thought New England played better last night, I think you can still see where they have issues. And it looks like the offensive line, they've kind of solidified the inside. But, you know, I just don't know if they're – you see the lack of verticals. Passing, you know, just the lack of a big play guy, and I think that's Bill's Schwartz will scheme that, but until somebody proves it to me, I'm going to say that guy that wears the hoodie and is you know, headset over his hoodie on cold days is the guy that I'm going to always always pull for or root for in tight situations, because I think the guy's the best coach that's coached maybe ever, and that's Belichick. So I'm going to take New England.
Yeah, I'm going to take New England as well. Jim Schwartz has to wait another week for the Gatorade shower. Let's move on to Carolina at Cincinnati. Bengals don't lose many at home. Carolina still, to me, Jeff, and your son will want to punch me on the nose for saying this, they're still too mistake-prone, and there's still too many errors there, so I don't see them winning on the road. I'm going Bengals.
Yeah, and I think the Bengals ran into a hornet's nest last night in New England. All the negative publicity and,
Tom's going to rise to the...
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You knew that they were going to come back with a vengeance, and I think that Cincinnati will bounce back when they get home because, like you say, they're very, very good at home.
Pittsburgh at Cleveland. Pittsburgh have alternated wins and losses all season, so this week is their turn for a loss. The Browns ran them very close in week one, almost came up with a win. I'm going to go Cleveland to win this one. I'm a believer in Mike Pettine.
I am too, because when I looked at the Jacksonville game, the thing that I thought was, if you recognize what Dick LeBeau, he's got some unbelievable numbers, success against rookie quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And so, I think that, they were going to win this one. But I think there's some holes in Pittsburgh. I really do. I don't know if they're, I just don't know if they're good enough. And I think Cleveland's kind of riding a high, and they'll come off that emotional win. And I think it's going to be a tough game, obviously. But I like Cleveland here, too.
All right, we go on to the Green Bay Packers at the Miami Dolphins. Miami coming off a big win at Wembley Stadium, of course, and then their bye week. I like what I saw from Ryan Tannehill. Can he keep pace with Aaron Rodgers, Jeff?
No. Not my opinion. And again, I think that the Packers have made some strides defensively. I don't know if they're there yet, but I think they've made some strides. And I just think that, Aaron Rodgers is playing at such a high level. And Lacy, you saw the semblance of a running game starting to happen, again. So I think that this is, again, a good football team going down to Miami, and that's a tough place to play, and it's, the heat and all the other things that the Packers will deal with, but I just think they're a better football team.
I agree, and they got the special quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, so I'm going Packers as well to win that one. Detroit and Minnesota, so Teddy Bridgewater should be back for the Vikings. Be good to get a good look at him on Sky Sports this Sunday. Detroit, they're doing it with defense, but they need to wake up offensively, Joe. I'm going to say that Detroit get the win on the road, because I think they need it and they need to get on track offensively, but it's not going to be easy, this one.
Well, it's just how tough the National Football League is. Here we were talking about Detroit is 3-1. Yeah. You know, I mean, and now all of a sudden it's like they got to win this football game. But that's life in that division.
Yeah.
And I think it's like you say, for the fans on Sky Sports, you're going to get a chance to see Teddy for the first time. And you know, obviously, if you're a Vikings fan, that's a big relief because you've seen enough Christian Ponder. And you know, I just think that the Lions will, you know, have a chance to get that thing straightened out, and hopefully Megatron, it will be healthy. If he's not healthy, that they'll sit him down in this one, and they can just play through that and get him healthy. But you know, this is a big game for the Lions, big game for the Lions, and I think they'll find a way.
Denver at the New York Jets. Rex Ryan has already named Geno Smith as the starter for Week 6, which means it's Peyton Manning and his 479 yards last week against Geno Smith and his 27 yards. There's only one winner. It's Denver.
Yeah, there's no question. And I just think all those weapons against that, you know, a secondary that doesn't have the ability to play man, you know, the type of man-to-man that Rex wants to play, it's going to be tough. So I would think that, you know, Peyton will go in there and hang big numbers, and you know, it'll be a tough one for the Jets again.
Baltimore at Tampa Bay. This one, you'd have early on in the season, you'd have said, well, it's Baltimore win. But now Tampa Bay and Mike Glennon have just made you think about, you know, think twice when you pick against us. But I am going to go Baltimore, Jeff, but this is an improved Buccaneers team.
They're trending in the right direction. Mm. You know, you start to see that because they could have completely unraveled after that embarrassment in Atlanta, and they haven't. You know, they bounced back, won, and then had a chance to win again this past weekend. But I just think Baltimore right now it plays good enough defense that they'll make it tough on Tampa, and Baltimore will win this one.
All right, Jacksonville at Tennessee. The Jags are 0-5. Is this their week? Is this their moment? Is this Blake Bortles' little piece of NFL history? Is this win number one for the season for the Jags, or is it the Titans?
You know, I think the Jaguars. You know, and I think the Titans, after blowing, one of the biggest leads, I think that's one of the worst losses in Titan history in terms of, you know, having a lead and surrendering a big lead, and emotionally what that's going to do to them, and you know, the comments in the head coach in the, you know, paper about maybe I've overestimated my football team, and you know, so I think that Jacksonville will have a way, and I think Gus will have his guys ready to play, and they'll play as hard as they can play, and you know, they'll have a chance to win it in a close game, but I think they'll win it.
Yeah, defense showed up this week for the Jags, which was impressive. Just couldn't get the win against the Steelers, but I'm going to pick them to get the win against Tennessee as well. I like that. And Jake Locker's nursing a thumb injury, so we've got to monitor that as the week goes on. San Diego at Oakland. The injuries are mounting for the Chargers, but they still have Philip Rivers there winging the football around the field. I wouldn't even say winging it. Sometimes it's wobbling the football around the field, but it gets there. Antonio Gates makes the catches. I've got to go San Diego here, Jeff.
Yeah, I do too. But it'll be interesting to see whether, you know, Tony Sperano will be able to, you know, to me it's not a talent thing as much with the Raiders, although they're not, you know, an overly talented football team, but they just didn't play when, you know, you watched them, and I think the Wembley game was the last straw. They just didn't play, and hopefully, you know, those veterans will, you know, react to Sperano in a different way.
He's a different type of coach, isn't he, Jeff?
Yeah, they'll be more competitive, but I still don't think they have enough weapons to beat San Diego.
No. Washington at Arizona. The Cardinals, I was impressed with the Cardinals last night, Jeff, for a while. They were hanging with Denver, and then Broncos pulled away at the end. But, you know, the Cardinals, then they've not got Carson Palmer. They lost Drew Stanton to a concussion. Logan Thomas comes in as a rookie and throws an 81-yard touchdown pass. They do have some injuries mounting. Calais Campbell injured his knee, might be out for the next month. But I think they'll have too much for Washington. They're just a very, very tough, well-coached team, aren't they?
Yeah, they are a tough. That's a good word to describe. They're a tough mentally, tough physically team. And you know what? I think Bruce Arians has quietly done one of the better coaching jobs in the National Football League. I agree with you. I think they'll beat Washington. I don't think Washington right now is very good, and I think they're struggling to find their way a little bit. And usually, that's the desert's not a place to find your way. It's a place to get marooned, and that's what I think is going to happen to Washington when they go to Arizona.
Our late game on Sunday is Dallas at Seattle. tough place to go and play, Seattle, but Dallas are 4-1. They've won four in a row. Who are you picking in this one, Jeff? And also, we've got a question from Adam Nichols in the mailbag. It says, what would Dallas's strategy have to be to win in Seattle?
Well, I think the first thing they're going to have to do is they're going to have to be able to hold up on the offensive line and defensive line.
Yep.
You know, and this is going to be an acid test. The Cowboys obviously are better on the offensive line, but again, will they be able to, you know, in that crowd, in that noise, with all the factors that brings in terms of calling your protections and getting communication done on the offensive line, you know, and then against that kind of front, with that kind of secondary behind it, you know, that's going to be the biggest key. And I think the Cowboys defensively will hang in there, but it's going to be a question of whether they can deal with the 13th man or the 12th man and the noise, and then also the intensity that Seattle plays with at home will be the, you know, the challenge for the Cowboys, I think.
I'm going Seattle. What about you?
I'm going Seattle also.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Sunday night game, New York Giants at Philadelphia. The Eagles, I said this last night on Sky, Jeff, they're exciting, but they're somewhat flawed. I know they've got offensive line issues. They've got Nick Foles already has more turnovers than he had all of last season. LeSean McCoy's not on track yet. So, you know, they're in these wild games, it seems, every week. They're finding ways to score on special teams. But I'm going to pick the Giants to win this one on the road.
Yeah, the Giants, you know, they're kind of like just Tom Coughlin. They're quiet and they don't, you know, you don't think about it. They're not flashy. They're solid and they find a way. But I'm going to take Philadelphia because I think Philadelphia, I don't think Philadelphia's played their best football yet. And I think that this is a key, you know, it's a rivalry game. It's a key divisional game. And I think the Eagles will be ready to play.
Wrapping up week 6 in the NFL, Monday Night Football, the San Francisco 49ers at the St. Louis Rams. And I am struggling with this one, Jeff, because I fancy the Rams to give them quite a game in St. Louis.
St. Louis is going to compete now. Mm. Don't think they're not going to compete. And with all the drama and all the stuff circulating around, and, you know, Jay Glazer's now saying that there's no way that Harbaugh is going to be in San Francisco next year, and yada, 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 yada. And they have become, you know, as the world turns NFL style, I mean, it's like the biggest soap opera going, but they're still a talented football team. And I think they've got too many good players for St. Louis.
Yeah, I'm probably going to stick with the 49ers for now, but I think it's going to be a close one. The Rams will certainly be competitive. Let's just get a couple more questions from the mailbag, Jeff, just to wrap things up. I did put out an appeal earlier today asking for some different questions because we had a lot of questions. Can Team X make the playoffs? And John Sheeran is a comedian. He says, okay, Neil, can Team Y make the playoffs? So I think they can. But here's a question from Craig Alexander, who says, do the Bengals have mental issues in big games? It was another epic failure in a primetime game last night. So they were talking, going back to the playoffs and how they've performed in, you know, last night's game in New England. Or do you think it was just Tom Brady? Where would you put the concern? Is it on the Bengals?
You know what? That's a really good point, because when you watched the game, it was a playoff environment that they were in. You know, you could sense it, the crowd, how loud the crowd was, how, you know, the sense of purpose that New England came out with. And the guy that I just didn't like his body language, I didn't like his demeanor, was Andy Dalton.
Oh, not again. And, I haven't seen the game yet, but
yeah,
that would worry me.
There was, particularly early in the game, there were a couple situations where they had, you know, take timeouts, time count violations, couldn't get, you know, with the noise, couldn't get plays called. Just kind of, then he has that demeanor where he doesn't command it like you want a guy to command it. Now, again, to say that they're, you know, an epic failure, that's a little strong. I think they ran into a buzzsaw last night. They ran into a team that was extremely well prepared, had their back against the wall, you know, had to listen for the first time maybe in a long time in their own city to people saying, are we good enough? Is it, you know, is this the end of the, you know, the dynasty, yada, yada, yada. And they responded the way you would want your team to respond. So, you know, I think it's too early to make that call. But again, there were signs of what I don't like about Andy Dalton, which was just that lack of, you know, just, hey, this is my team, my time, let's go, that you saw out of the other quarterback.
And the worry for Dalton is, Jeff, we're going to look for that now, because me and you sat in the studios last year, the day after Andrew Luck had come back in that playoff game against the Kansas City Chiefs and refused to be beaten. Andy Dalton was like a rabbit in the headlights. If he's done it again in a big game, the next time he has a big game, all eyes are going to be on him, and it's the situation is just going to become worse and worse unless he goes out and wins one of these big ones.
Well, yeah, and it's true. And one of the things in pro football is that you tell players all the time is the easiest thing that is to get labeled. Mm. The hardest thing is to get that label off of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, particularly when they're those kinds of, you know, it's like the Jay Cutler thing. A lot of Jay's issues, if you will, with how he's perceived are body language issues, you know, just kind of the way he comes off. And that's what I start to see in Andy Dalton in those moments when you want that quarterback to be above the fray. You want him to be, you know, to play, you know, kind of impervious to that kind of stuff. And it looked like he got, as you say, that deer in the headlight look a little bit last night.
One last question. Ryan Borgie asks, how many NFL games are the NFL thinking of playing in London next year? Seen a couple of things on this, Jeff, and it's purely speculation at the moment. The commissioner has talked about potentially four games, and then I saw last week Executive Vice President of International Mark Waller said he alluded to the fact the Rugby World Cup is in the UK next year, and that will take up a couple of games at Wembley Stadium, but was talking about three games at least still. I mean, I don't think we're going to see a decrease from three games, are we? I don't think we're going back to two. I think we'll be at least at three for 2015.
I think so, because, I mean, there's been no dip. I mean, you look at what you guys did on Regent Street. You look at the, you know, how that game came off. You look at the passion of the fans. You look at all the factors that the NFL's, you know, obviously monitoring during the course of these games. And you got to say, the fans have proven now that there's an appetite for the game. There's a strong appetite for the game. And, you know, three and four games, I don't think, is outside of the question as we go into the future, and hopefully more as we go into the future.
All right. That's a good positive note to end on. It was a great week in the NFL again, week five. They always are. Jeff, good stuff, mate. Thank you very much.
As always. And you guys have a great broadcast. And again, we'll see you next week.
All right, that's good stuff from Jeff Reinbold. Can't wait for him to come over, get him over for the Sky Sports Studios end of November. He'll be with us for the rest of the season. Should be good stuff. Thanks for joining us this week on Inside the Huddle. It's been a USP content production in association with skysports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sport social network. Until next week, it's bye for now.